I was in Mayapur just before Gopurnima this year, when that was the day that Tamal Krishna Maharaj suddenly left our company. Did any of you see Tamal Krishna Maharaj? None of you was. None of you saw him. Maybe you must have seen him. Maybe you saw the video. Saw him on the video. God's demigods and incarnations. That's a good one. You should distribute that here more. I didn't. I mean, of course, I saw him many times, but to tell you the truth, I kept a little distance from him because I was a little afraid. Is not exactly the word, but he was very powerful figure. And but now I was surprised myself how much I felt affected by his passing away, because he was so much part of our movement. I mean, it's difficult to imagine. I mean, we can't imagine ISKCON without Prabhupada being personally present. I mean, it took us many years to, and still, I mean, okay, Maharaj, please come and sit here. No, no, please come. Mariada, let's go. The Tamal Krishna Maharaj was so central to the Krishna consciousness movement that it was it's very difficult to imagine. Of course, now we're living with that, but it's very difficult to imagine ISKCON without his personal presence. So, one thing that I very much experienced in the days and weeks, and that's still going on, that followed after his departure, and it's a commonly said thing that we often appreciate people more after they go away. We may spend our whole life fighting with people, or maybe not taking them very seriously, but then when they pass away, we realize that what association we've lost. So, that of course is very much true in the case of such a great personality as Tamal Krishna Maharaj. I heard that according to Vedic or Indian, or that we call physiognomy, that this mark on the right side of the head, he had a big birthmark, so that's supposed to be the sign of a great personality. I think Gorbachev has it like that also. This Gorbachev, former prime minister or whatever of the ex-USSR. Of course, Tamal Krishna Maharaj is in a completely different realm than Mr. Gorbachev. He was in Tamal Krishna Maharaj's great in the spiritual realm. Gorbachev was great in the material realm. But that point that we tend to appreciate people more when they pass away, why don't we appreciate them now? That would be a very wonderful thing. Life is such, especially in Kali Yuga, that there always seems to be some kind of friction between different people. Especially Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So even among devotees, sometimes you find that, although we should really try to create an atmosphere in which that isn't present, where love and trust is something that's not just something spoken about, but we really feel that among devotees. There was, Prabhupada used these words, love and trust. At one time I heard someone was sarcastically making a sarcastic comment about Prabhupada's words, love and trust. Love money and trust nobody. So, it sounds funny, but actually, that is not the motto of our movement. That is materialistic life. love money and trust nobody. So devotional life means Advaishta Sarva Bhutanam Maitra Karuna Bhimacha. To not feel spite towards anybody, towards any living being. And to be friendly and merciful to all living beings. So how much more so of the devotees? It's a very wonderful thing to be a devotee. I mean, of course, we may consider where are we in terms of modern philosophy, or in terms of science, and that's been translated into modern philosophy. Einstein has contributed relativity theory, that everything is relative to everything else. That is true in the material sense. Ultimately, everything is relative to Krishna, who is absolute. But we can consider our position, or the position of, we may say, neophyte struggling devotees from various angles. So from one angle, if we talk about or think about the love of the gopis for Krishna, then where are we? Long way. Of course, if you think that I'm already there, then probably further away than we can imagine. So if we think about the exalted state of pure devotion for Krishna, that the gopis are prepared to go to hell for millions of lifetimes, just to, if Krishna is inconvenienced by a drop of sweat on his forehead, to remove that, they're prepared to go to hell for millions of births. So we can't imagine what is that love, intense love for Krishna. In the absence of Krishna, they almost died. Just the slight hope that Krishna might again come to Vrindavan, they were remaining alive. So, if we realistically consider, I think most of us would probably admit we're a long way from such an exalted stage of consciousness. On the other hand, if we consider, if we compare devotees, even someone who's struggling, we may say, doesn't appear to be very advanced. If we compare with grossly materialistic people who have no interest in Krishna consciousness, we can see devotees are all very wonderful and glorious personalities. One of my disciples passed away recently, just a few months ago. He was killed in a motorcycle accident. So, among all my disciples, I chastised him more than any of the others. He got a lot of chastisement. But he took it very well. So, he got a lot of chastisement. Actually, he was a very serious devotee, but he was very strongly fixed on book distribution. But he came from a very rough background. He was in his hometown. People, when they heard he'd become a, he's from Russia, when they heard he was a monk living in India, people couldn't believe it, because he was the most famous hippie and wild man in the whole town. So they were very surprised. So he's a little rough, you could say, but he's very sincere. Afterwards, devotees, after he passed away, devotees so much, how he was so much dedicated to distributing Srila Prabhupada's books, how he's very serious about devotional service. So, it's good to appreciate devotees. I say we can talk something about Krishna, but Krishna himself says, Nad bhakta puja vyapika. my devotees, they should, when Krishna is describing to Uddhava what is the process of worshipping himself, he said, describing so many things, he said, the worship of my devotees is even more important. So we shall try to appreciate. We see the Prabhupada, he was appreciated the services rendered by devotees. He took notice of someone, even you could say some insignificant devotee. Actually, there's no insignificant devotee. But some devotees, and Prabhupada himself, he sometimes talked about the important devotees. You're all in, so he sometimes made a distinction. Some devotees are very prominent leaders, and others. He didn't talk about unimportant devotees. But by talking about important devotees, then obviously there was a distinction between those who are leaders and pushing on the movement in a very strong way, and others who were followers. They were more follower types than leaders. Of course, in one instance, when one devotee was one brahmachari was recommended for sannyas, Prabhupada said he was a brahmachari. Prabhupada said, there's no need for him to take sannyas. He's doing more than any sannyasi by distributing so many books every day and inspiring others to do so. So Prabhupada, pragmatically, he made distinctions between what could be called important devotees and less important devotees, but he would encourage everybody. One devotee told me, do you remember Godroom? He was in India in the 70s from America. His name was Godroom. You were in Vrindavan. He was more on Mayapur side in South India. Anyway, very sweet natured devotee. He was in India. He's from America. Very big, tall, gentle giant. Sometimes they have a very big body, but they're very soft. So he was in South India and Mayapur. His name was Godroom, which is one of the islands of Navadvipa. Prabhupada called it big in that name. So he married an Indian girl and he went to America. I didn't give him. Is it okay? So I didn't hear from him in a long time. He married some girl from Hyderabad or something. Anyway, he told me he was at the Hyderabad farm. Prabhupada was staying there. He was doing guard duty. Prabhupada was in a little cottage, he was at night, and he was standing outside at night doing guard duty. Not there's any real need, but you don't know who's going to come and the farm. But anyway, someone should guard Prabhupada. Like that. Just like Krishna has his commander-in-chief of his army, Bhishmak Singh. He doesn't need any army, he can kill everyone just by himself. Jarasandha comes with his big troops. Krishna just can kill them very easily. But anyway, yes, his king should have some followers, some bodyguards and all those kinds of things.
So Godroom was doing the night guard duty. Godroom Prabhu told me this. So
he was chanting in the night. Prabhupada was chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, chanting Japa. Prabhupada was doing his translation inside. This is like 1 o'clock in the morning, something like this. I wish I could do that. Work all day and then preach, write books at night. Instead of just sleeping all night and most of the day too. And the opposite. So anyway, Prabhupada came out and he sat down with Godroom and taught. He said, you have to chant more clearly. He's writing his books for 10,000 years, the law books for all of humans and such. But he took some time to be with his disciple. What you could say, not a very important disciple. You could say like that, but he was important to Prabhupada. Prabhupada sat with him and spent some time chanting with him.
taught me how you chant clearly. He pre-chanted a round with him. Then he went back and did his chanting. So Godrum told him. He was so much pleased with Prabhupada. He took the time to get Prabhupada, even though he's what you could call him, might call an insignificant disciple. But he wasn't insignificant to Prabhupada. He wanted that he should chant clearly and nicely, and in this way become purified. There are these Prabhupada memory video cassettes. I watched all of them. I told that in Vrindavan. I'll tell this story as well. Actually, in Vrindavan, I bought one CD of Jagatara Maharaj's memories of Prabhupada. So I'd seen it all before in a different video cassette. So I was a little disappointed. I thought it was something new. Anyway, those of you who have a computer, if anyone would want it, I've seen it, so you can see me afterwards. I'll give it to whoever wants it. Maybe you want to make copies. It's a video, VCD. So anyway, I was watching one of these very nice memories, different devotees speaking there. Memories of different interactions with Srila Prabhupada. And there was one very, among all of them, I remember very much, there was one of Krishnakanti. I think it was either Krishnakanti or Mangalananda. These two devotees that used to work together to make music. They made this Chaitanya album. They were the first ones to make like modern music in ISKCON. But it wasn't nasty, hard rock, but it was just pleasant music with Krishna conscious lyrics. So I can't remember. Anyway, I remember when I was watching this memory of the I can't remember if it was Krishnakanti or Mangalananda, one of them. And they were being interviewed about what are their memories of Prabhupada. And let's say Krishnakanti. So he was being interviewed, and obviously the cameraman was there. You can't see the cameraman. Must have been Siddhanta. So Krishnakanti was sitting back, looking very relaxed. He's a middle-aged Californian. Now he's middle-aged. Those days we were all young men. We're all in our 20s, except Maharaj joined when he was more than 30. He was an old man to all of us, him and Shubhav Maharaj in London, because we were all mostly teenagers. So I joined when I was 18, and Maharaj was already that time almost 20 years older than me. Something like that. So anyway, he's sitting there looking for, you know, he's a little chubby, got a little beard. And he's speaking very relaxed way. Very happy way, talking about, oh, Prabhupada. I went to see him and I showed him the album, and Prabhupada looked at it and he said, yes, it's very nice. He was just talking like this in a very relaxed way. And then he said, we finished, and then I went out of the room. And then he said, and then Prabhupada called me back, he said, and then all of a sudden he just burst into tears. And they showed the whole thing. He went on crying and crying and crying and crying for about, must have been for about 5 minutes. He was trying to say, he was trying to talk, and as soon as he tried to talk, he just keep on crying and crying. And then he said, I'm sorry. And Siddham said, it doesn't matter, lots of people do that. When they start talking about Prabhupada, they just start crying and crying. He said, don't worry, we'll edit it, Siddham said. But he didn't edit it, actually. In the end, he didn't, he showed it all. So, and then eventually, you know, Krishnakanti Prabhu composed himself. Prabhupada called me back. So why was he crying and crying and crying? Because Prabhupada called him back. He said what he had to say to Prabhupada, and he went out of the room, and Prabhupada called him back. And remembering that, he became so much overcome with emotion that Prabhupada called him back and he said something more. That he gave him some little extra advice how you should make the songs. I can't remember exactly. But just the fact that Prabhupada, it wasn't just, he came to see him anymore. The fact that he called him back, that Prabhupada really cared so much about him.
And he wanted to give him a little extra advice. It wasn't just like a formal visit, pat on the head. But Prabhupada actually was considering how to give him some advice to improve his service to Krishna. That Prabhupada called him back that he could understand that Prabhupada cared so much for him. And thinking of that, so many years later, maybe 25 years later, that he just became overcome with emotion. Prabhupada, such a great personality, and so many disciples to see, and so many busy things to do, such a busy schedule, that he cared enough to call me back and give me a little extra instruction. Shruti Kirti Prabhu, who is the traveling servant who was traveling with Prabhupada, and he told me once that Prabhupada used to chastise him quite a lot. And Shruti Kirti is a very sweet person. The Prabhupada had different servants. Hari Shauri Prabhu, he's also sweet, but in a different way. I mean, sometimes people think he's somewhat harsh. Because they're very staunch devotee. But he sometimes is perceived as being somewhat harsh like that. Of course, in Sanskrit, harsh means happiness, smiling like this, but in English, harsh means quite strict and hard. So, Shruti Kirti was and is a very sweet kind of person. People have different kinds of natures. But he said the Prabhupada sometimes used to yell at me. And he said that, I can tell you, it wasn't a very pleasant experience being yelled at by Prabhupada, because, you know, people do things wrong. And when people did things wrong, Prabhupada let them know very clearly. He would often shout at the devotee, very severely chastise him. You must have seen that when you were in Vrindavan. Prabhupada was being very strong. Maharaj was temple commander in Vrindavan when Prabhupada was living there. And Prabhupada was, at that time, maybe more than any other time, Prabhupada was chastising anyone all the time. So anyway, Shruti Kirti Prabhu told me that Prabhupada used to yell at me, and it was not a very pleasant experience. He didn't feel very... But he said, I would give anything in the world to have that opportunity again. Maybe Maharaj should speak something. You should speak something. So, then, just I want to make that point now. Prabhupada... since Shruti Kirti Prabhu was saying that I would have anything to have Prabhupada yell at me again, why? Why should that be? Why should you want someone to yell at you? You see that you don't think that's a very nice thing. Someone will chastise you and shout at you. Why was Shruti Kirti Prabhu saying that? I'd give anything to have that opportunity again. Because Prabhupada's chastisement, that was another manifestation of his deep love for his disciples. And they felt that. That's why if someone yells at you, you might feel enmity towards them. You might say, well, I never want to see them again. To hell with them. You know, I'll yell back at them. But Prabhupada was regularly yelling. But he's thinking, I'd like to have that opportunity again. So that caring for devotees. That's because Prabhupada cared. And people, they were prepared to do anything for him. Prabhupada, he said that sometimes, that these followers of mine, they're ready, they'll do anything for him. He was quite confident. Once one of his disciples, lady disciple, Malati, she was cooking for Prabhupada and she brought prasada to him. At that time Prabhupada was sitting in his hut in Mayapur with a group of his godbrothers who were all sannyasis. You know, they're all very strict sannyasis. And you know, here's this young American woman bringing prasada for Prabhupada, and they would, you know, nowadays some of them are traveling in the Western countries, and I don't know, maybe they bring their own cooks from India. But, you know, previously they wouldn't dream of taking, I mean, they wouldn't even, they were, many of them were criticizing why you're taking Western disciples. And I know one of Prabhupada's godbrothers came to Bangladesh once, and he came to our ashram and this and that, but he wouldn't take any food, even cooked by the Bengali devotees. Because I don't know what he was thinking, but they didn't like to take. There were some feelings at that time. That's changed now. But they were very traditional, and they couldn't imagine taking food from a Westerner. You know, this person is a meat eater, and a woman, you're a sannyasi. So she came in bringing some prasad that she cooked for Prabhupada, crawling. She brought it in crawling on the floor, feeling very humble in the presence of so many sannyasis. So Prabhupada commented that, you know, you may think that she's just some Western woman or something like that, but she would slit her throat for me, and I would slit mine for her. So those are the feelings that Prabhupada, he invoked. Prabhupada went to America and preached Krishna consciously. It wasn't that he had a big organization before him or that, you see here in India, especially in South India, become people are very respectful to sannyasis, and they that's their culture is there, it's not there in America. The democratic ideal is very strong, for better or for worse. There may be some advantages, but it doesn't foster that mood of great respect for others, which is central to Vedic culture, which of course can be misused also. But Prabhupada had to go, he had no money, no manpower, no one respected him as such. I mean, you know, people maybe old man or so, they might be a little considerate. No one understood anything he was talking about or even what he was saying. They might have had difficulty understanding what he was saying because Prabhupada's pronunciation is quite different to American pronunciation. I mean, I'm not from America, I'm from Britain, but I remember I was listening to Prabhupada's cassettes for 1 month before I could understand what Prabhupada was saying. I just couldn't understand. His manner of pronunciation is quite different. Even some devotees say, I offered in Baroda, but the town president is an American. So devotees who speak English there, one devotee told me that when I speak English to them, they can understand. When the town president, Master Bo, speaks English to them, they can understand. But when we speak English together, me and him, they can't understand. So it was like that. I couldn't understand. There's a different pronunciation altogether. So Prabhupada, how was he able to convince people to take up Krishna consciousness? Well, there could be different things. There are different factors to Prabhupada's being able to do that. You could say, well, it's the mercy of Krishna, it's Prabhupada's sincerity, it's good philosophy, it's prasadam. Prabhupada gave an alternative, so it's all these factors are there, but one major factor which I'm especially stressing on this evening, is that Prabhupada really cared. And people could appreciate that. I mean, apart from all the philosophy, I mean, practically, most of the people coming, it took them a long time before they could even begin to understand the philosophy Prabhupada was talking about. And if you listen to those early cassettes of Prabhupada speaking in 1966, it was very, very basic philosophy, Prabhupada was speaking. But it took most of those, even people who are coming regularly, they had to hear again and again and again and again just to pick up the very basics. He genuinely cared for people. And of course, people appreciate, for instance, Mother Teresa, that she cared for people. So people reciprocated with that also. But then again, if we see what is Mother Teresa's contribution, Prabhupada's contribution, there's no comparison. People of Mother Teresa became very famous. Prabhupada, not so much so, because people, they don't have knowledge of what is the best contribution to human society. She was caring for people on the bodily platform, which, of course, she had a very, her commitment was spiritual. Her motivation was spiritual, but she was, her caring was manifest mostly in terms of giving physical aid to people, whereas Prabhupada's contribution was not so easily perceivable. It was on totally spiritual level. But that Prabhupada actually cared for people, and that he sacrificed so much to give himself to others so that they could become free from birth and death and understand Krishna. So even though people might not, people who are coming to Prabhupada, they might not have even consciously appreciated that. But certainly they appreciated it and they wanted to reciprocate with Prabhupada. Just like Prabhupada mentioned in one of his lectures, he was giving an example that the mango is the king of fruits. So then one devotee, devotee means he was coming, wasn't a committed devotee, but he liked to hear Prabhupada. So then he asked Prabhupada that, well, do you like mango? He said, yes, he's the king of fruits. So then he searched through the, of course nowadays in big cities, New York and London, you can get what they call mangoes, but actually if you had Indian mangoes and what they serve in the Western countries, it's, you wouldn't think it's a mango at all. Anyway, it's called a mango, it looks like a mango. I think that they cost about £1, which is like 70 rupees each in London. But they use it. So anyway, he searched. I say, nowadays you can find them quite easily, mangoes in big cities like London and New York. I guess in those days he had to search and he found a shop that sold mangoes. So he started to bring, he brought a mango to Prabhupada. Oh, thank you very much. So why is Prabhupada saying thank you? He said, Prabhupada is very pleased. Why is that? Of course he liked mangoes. He was pleased. But more he was pleased that this Steve, who was coming, had the thoughtfulness that, oh, he liked to give. He went to some trouble to find them. So why did Steve want to do that? Because he wanted to reciprocate. He felt Prabhupada is giving something to us that we can't repay, actually. He's giving his time, he's giving the trouble to explain all these things, and he was perceiving that, yes, this Krishna consciousness is something very nice. So he reciprocated by bringing a mango. And Prabhupada appreciated that. And out of that, every day he used to bring one mango. And Prabhupada even commented, he said, that in one lecture he was talking about, this is an exchange of love. He was explaining Patram Pushpam Paranta, just like Steve, he is bringing me every day one mango. And then Steve, later he was initiated in the name of Satsarup Das, whose name I think you all know. Do you know that name? No. Satsarup Das Goswami, who became one of Prabhupada's... Anyway, you all know, he's one of Prabhupada's most intimate servitors, and has written many books, among which is Prabhupada Lilamrita, is especially a great masterpiece. You've probably, most of you, read the abridged version, isn't it? You should read the full one. A lot of reading to do. So this, actually this year, Satsarup Maharaj, in his Vyasa Puja offering for Prabhupada, he wrote about the humanity of Prabhupada. So some people misunderstood them and said, well, that's not right. You're supposed to see the Guru as good as God. But Satsarup Maharaj was presenting that, yes, he's as good as God, but I remember him as a very human person also, human in the sense that, you know, he wasn't like some kind of angel, an apparition that just suddenly all the white dots come together and there's an angel standing in front of you and they speak in a very, like an echoing kind of voice, and then they just, and they speak some kind of mystic words that no one can understand. You should meditate on the sound of one hand clapping, or something like this. And then they just vanish away. But by saying that Prabhupada was very human, Satsarup Maharaj is conveying that he was a very real person. He wasn't just, you know, some kind of mystic tinsel runner. Again, that's... He was a very real person. If you did something wrong, he'd shout at you. If you did something right, he'd appreciate it. Actually, he's completely unpredictable. You couldn't tell at all. You didn't know whether you're doing right or wrong. But a very lovable person in a unique way. So some people may criticize, why are you saying he's human? But Satsarup Maharaj was appreciated. I mean, he knew him personally from the days when he was not glorified as the Acharya, but he was Swamiji. And Steve and company, they were helping him because he had no place to stay, and they found him a room to stay, and they came and they painted it, and they went to an Indian store and they got some posters and they put them on the wall. And Prabhupada came and said, oh, this looks very nice. This is a very nice picture you brought of Hanuman. And someone asked, who is that, Swamiji? Is that a cat? They'd not heard, no one had heard of Hanuman. They said, someone thought he was a cat. You can imagine how far away they were from Krishna consciousness. Say, at least in India, you don't have to explain to people that Hanuman is not a cat. Everyone knows who Hanuman is. So far away. And in another lecture, Prabhupada was, this is 1966, you could hear that. Of course, nowadays we have so many pictures of Krishna painted by ISKCON artists. There are so many traditional pictures of Krishna also. So Prabhupada was giving an example. He was explaining the verse, Ajopi Sadagriyam Bhavutanam Ishwarupi Sampakatim Swamadishtayam. Sambhavami Atmamaya. What's the translation of that verse? Can anyone say? Although I am unborn and my transcendental form never deteriorates, nevertheless, I appear within this. My transcendental form never deteriorates. And although I am the Lord of all living beings, still, I appear in this material world by my own internal, or my own personal energy. So Prabhupada was explaining the point, avyaya atma, that Krishna never deteriorates. Krishna's form never deteriorates, as ours does. Our form grows older. Again, I remember Maharaj, now he's looking older. When I first saw him, some 27 years ago, he was much younger. Now he didn't have white hair, and he has white hair. So this happens to all of us. Even Prabhupada said that himself when he was lying in his bed the last 6 months, very sick, manifesting pastimes of sickness. He said, don't think that this will not happen to you. So Prabhupada was explaining that Krishna's transcendental form never deteriorates. And he was explaining that, you see Krishna, you see the picture of Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. At that time, by worldly calculation, he was at least 125 years old. But he still appeared as a young boy. So he asked all the people, have you seen the picture of Krishna on the battlefield? Blank faces. No one had ever seen the picture of Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. None seen. So Prabhupada was preaching from a very, to people who really knew nothing about Krishna. They had not even heard, most people had never even heard the name of Krishna, apart from a few scholars in the university. Very few people had even heard the name of Krishna. Bhagavad Gita was somewhat known among a certain class of intellectuals. But most of the translations, they sidelined Krishna. They hardly mentioned Krishna. They weren't devotional translations. Not most of the translations. All of them. Because Prabhupada writes in his preface to Bhagavad Gita that there are so many translations of Bhagavad Gita that why is there a need for another one? Prabhupada explained there is a need of another one because none of them actually present Bhagavad Gita as it is. So Prabhupada was brought people to Krishna consciousness by caring, not in a mushy, sentimental manner. It's often people, they make a big show, oh, I love you, I care for you, and this and that. But it's easy to say, but to actually care for others, to have real substance. That's something I noted this in that book of mine, these glimpses of traditional Indian life, that when we were first in Bangladesh in the early 1980s, so one young man who he was coming to our ashram, and after some time he went to America for study or whatever. Then after a year he came back, and he told us he wasn't at all impressed by the American way of life. And particularly he said that they make such a big show of love. The man and wife on the street, they'll kiss each other, which still in India it's still taboo to a large extent. And in Bangladesh, absolutely, still, even now, and that was the early 90s, more than 20 years ago. So, they kiss in public, and they say, darling, I love you, they say it openly. He said, in this country, they have no such thing. No man will say to any woman, even his wife, in public, I love you. And then they won't make a big show, they won't kiss anyone, including their wife, in public. It's all a private. So he said they make a big show of love like this. They're always saying, I love you, darling, I love you, but then they fight and they divorce. So whereas in our country, we never say, I love you, I love you. You don't need to say it, it's understood. So he was quite disgusted that all this talk, love, 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 and they sign a letter with love or some such thing. But they're always talking about it, but there doesn't really seem to be that much there. have families in the same way. I mean, like in Bangladesh, even now, more than India, the family unit is very strong. So, I mean, the love, it's not just talking about it, but they actually live together and work together. It's not just something to talk about. It's like in the movies in India, now they're promoting this idea. PR, what's your old time in the same but this idea that you fall in love and it's using all kinds of stars floating around, hearts floating around your head, and all this kind of thing. But this is some kind of dream state that sometimes people go into for some time. But then the reality is that you have to live with someone and you get married and all this. And the reality of life is that however much you like someone and you get on with them, but the reality is you have to go out and get some money and hold the whole show together. So this whole idea of getting married just on the basis of love, it's not a good idea. Just on the basis. But one should understand that there's responsibility, that if you just get married on the basis of some temporary emotional state, later on you find out that you don't really like the person at all. Once the euphoria has settled down. Anyway, we're getting into a different subject now, but the point is that actual love, caring, feeling, it's a deeply felt emotion. And not just an emotion, but it's practically manifested in our dealings with each other. And that is the essence of bhakti. We're talking about love of Krishna. What is that love? Caring, feeling. Just like Prabhupada, we say he loved them, he cared for the devotees. He cared for the deities, for Krishna. He didn't just install deities and then, you know, everything's okay, whatever you do is okay. But he would get very upset if he saw the deities were not worshipped properly. Once he wrote that these abominable activities, why the deities are not being looked after properly? Why are you not keeping the temple clean? That why is Prabhupada getting angry? Because he loved Krishna. But why are you not serving Krishna properly? You get angry. I've given you the opportunity to serve Krishna, and you're not. Why don't you care for Krishna? Why don't you serve? Why is the offering late? Why is it not kept clean? You could tell us so many stories about cleanliness in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada was very particular about this because he loved Krishna. He wanted to see that Krishna was served properly. So love is not simply some sentimental feeling, but that is practically demonstrated in our behavior. It's easy to say, I love, I love, I love. Just like several times I gave that example. That a man may come home from work. Of course, nowadays the wife may come after him. But man may come home from work and when he comes home and the wife says, I love you, I love you. Okay, that's nice. What did you cook for dinner? Didn't cook anything. But I love you. So she doesn't need, if she cooks, then she's understood the love is manifested by the cooking. If you just say, I love you and you don't cook, then what's the meaning of your love? I'd rather you didn't love me, give me some rice to eat. So love that is manifested in practical action, and the practical action of devotees is their intense desire to serve Krishna, not just as a formality. Prabhupada didn't mean some formal religion. There's already so much of that in the world. It's simply you go to the church or the temple and you pray, dear God, give me some more money. Why are you keeping it all for yourself? Sometimes it's a psychological analysis that this Freud, Sigmund Freud, he said that religion is this, like a psychological crutch, because people are suffering and therefore they have to, because they're not psychologically balanced, therefore they have to imagine that there's some God who is helping them, and at the end of their miserable life they'll go to God. So it may be that people adopt religion as a kind of psychological crutch that doesn't negate, or that doesn't, the fact that people may do so doesn't mean that there isn't actually a God who we can reciprocate within a loving relationship. But Prabhupada brought religion as like living, dynamic experience, relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is that relationship? Relationship, again, it's not simply that trying to balance two minds against each other. There's another mistake in the Western concept of relationships, putting too much stress on trying to match people together mentally. But relationship is solidified by practical interaction, by service. The wife serves the husband serves the wife. They have different duties, how to do it. So that is a practical exchange. Instead of trying to balance each other's minds, it's a practical exchange of service, responsibility, which is also, it's not just between husband and wife, but there's also joint family, means there are aunts, uncles, and two sets of grandparents, and like this, so many children, not only one's own children, but other brothers' children also. So this is a material example, on the material platform now, relationships are solidified by mutual, practical activities of mutual cooperation, not simply talking or thinking about or trying to, like I say, mentally balance each other out. Practical activities. But naturally, if at all we are grateful, if we're not simply ingrates, then if someone does something to serve us or to help us, then we're grateful. And we feel like reciprocating with them by also doing something to serve them. Just like Steve was bringing a mango. And on this basis, loving relationships are developed out of appreciation. Oh, someone is doing something. How nice. Appreciate. Let me reciprocate. And in this way, loving relationships are developed. So Prabhupada, he had that knack of appreciating people's service, and then they would be encouraged by that, and then they'd like to do more service. And Prabhupada guided how to come up and do more and more service for Krishna. And if they made a mistake, then he would also point it out, and to give them the sense that we have to serve Krishna in the best possible way. When you begin to serve Krishna, yes, appreciate it, very nice. Please come up. But on one side, encouragement, but then when one becomes more mature in devotional service, then it's expected that one should understand the philosophy also that actually that no service is really good enough for Krishna. Krishna is very kind, and he's very grateful, and he appreciates even a little service done by the devotee. But considering his position, that no service is really good enough. And in this way, devotee always remains unsatisfied. He's satisfied to serve Krishna, but in another sense he's unsatisfied because he's thinking, I should serve more. So Prabhupada, by encouragement, sometimes chastisement, he brought devotees onto devotional service. But he appreciated any service done, even that amazing incident when he was lecturing on his in that little storefront in the Bowery, which at that time was a place where all the drunkards, that was the area for all the drunkards, they used to live there. So Prabhupada was lecturing on Bhagavad Gita, and you can hear on the tape actually how some drunkard comes into the middle and talking all incoherently, like this. And Prabhupada says, "What is that?" He's in wanting to disturb. The drunkard comes in, and what happens? He puts down on the side of the room two rolls of toilet paper and stumbles out, talking all nonsense. Prabhupada said, "His devotional service has begun." Actually, we don't use toilet paper because that's considered unhealthy. I mean, I hope I don't have to explain to you why we don't use toilet paper. But Prabhupada had no use for toilet paper, but the man in a drunken state, he didn't really know what he was doing. He made a donation. So Prabhupada appreciated, he did some devotional service. So that's appreciation, that someone did something. So also, let us try to cultivate this quality. I'm preaching here to myself also, I'm not only speaking to you, because I certainly have to develop this quality. More I should develop, because in this very bad situation of being a sannyasi, one is always, you see, like this, I'm sitting up above you. Why should I sit above you? If I was actually a Vaishnava, then I should sit below you. But as for the sake of some formality, I'm supposed to sit above you. And people are coming and they're respectful to me and they're offering gifts and so many things. So there may be a tendency to take that for granted. Oh, okay, all right. Brought something. Okay, go away. Get out. Don't disturb. Rascal. You may think like that. Oh, you only brought two apples. Look, that's not right. You should have brought more. So there may be a tendency to not reciprocate or not be appreciative. So that may be more so in my position, but among all of us, that tendency may be there. So let us try to appreciate devotees. Yesterday, so many devotees, they were going out for book distribution. Today also, every day, I'd like to do some service to Krishna. So, because we're in the neophyte stage, it may be that we have various anarthas also. We come to devotional service with a desire to serve Krishna, but we have, because we're coming from material existence, so we have lust, greed, anger, envy, illusion. We bring with us so many bad qualities, and through all that, or with all that, we're trying to serve Krishna. But these non-devotional tendencies or non-devotional characteristics, they may manifest. We may be serving Krishna, but we may also be proud, or irritable, or lazy, or there's so many possible bad qualities. So you may think, that person, You may not appreciate the service of a devotee. You may think, that person's just too this, or too that, or too the other. But I'll tell one story. I'm compiling this book on Bhakti Sansasrata. So this is a nice story that Bhakti Charaswami told me, actually. He heard it from a disciple of Bhakti Sansasrata. There was one old lady who used to cook in one of the monks. She used to cook for the devotees. They were very strict about it. But at least some old as Bhakti Chara Maharaj told him, she was a rather cantankerous old lady. Do you know what cantankerous means? It means somewhat irritable and tend to get angry and a little bit unpleasant kind of character. So he used that word. So anyway, she passed away. She was old, and it happens to old people more than young people. They die. So then afterwards, there was some ceremony, and then afterwards the devotees were saying, she was quite a character, you know, and always getting angry. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur walked in the room. He heard what they were saying. And he said, yes, it's true, she was irritable by nature. But do you remember how she always used to cook for you every single day? That she used to take so much trouble to make nice food for you to eat. Do you remember that also? So there were several incidents like that. There's another time when another devotee was cooking, a man, and he used to fight with, he fought with everyone in the ashram except Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. And he also passed away. And then again, after his cremation ceremony, the bodies were talking, they were all recounting all